Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. What are we to make of the memorandum of understanding ending the U.S.-Israel war on Iran? At this point, it would seem to be more of a pause than a peace process. Nothing has been resolved, and the headwinds against a final agreement are enormous. The trust deficit remains. Crosstalking the so-called Memorandum of Understanding, I'm joined by my guest, Muhannad Aish in Calgary. He is a professor of sociology at Mount Royal University in Calgary. In Washington, we have Helena Coban. She is president of Just World Educational. And in Tehran, we cross to Fawad Azadi. He is an associate professor at the Department of World Studies at the University of Tehran. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Calgary first. You know, one of the things I find very frustrating talking about the so-called memorandum of understanding is that we haven't seen it yet, okay? And there's an enormous amount of commentary, and I would claim people are seeing into something that they haven't seen yet to score political points, defining their red lines. It's all conditional on this. It's obviously, you know, it's all conditional what Iran does, okay? For goodness sake, it was Israel and the United States that started this war. So I'm very frustrated here. How do you, what is your frustration? Because I'm sure it's the same.
Thank you. So let me borrow a sentence that we heard from Trump so many times over the last couple of months. He kept saying, Iran is desperate for a deal. Iran is desperate for a deal. The reality is that Trump is so desperate for a deal. And Iran basically had him cornered. There was no way out for him other than to go and unleash, you know, what he keeps saying, unleash hell on them and destroy their civilization and all of that, which he was not able to do. I mean, sure, technically you can, you know, drop a nuclear weapon on Iran, but that would also mean the end of all of the regional allies of the United States. So it was not really an option anyway. So Trump was desperate for a deal. He's going to try to spin this, and his supporters in the U.S. are going to try to spin this so hard that this is something that they want and all of that. But every honest observer knows that the U.S. absolutely lost. Yep. Israel has absolutely lost strategically. I think the Iranians are probably fine with the Americans and the Trump administration especially trying to spin this, as long as the real things that they agreed to are playing out. And we're hearing today that Iranian ships are moving, that the U.S. is lifting its blockade of the blockade. So that's probably a step in the right direction. But you're right, there's going to be a long process ahead. And the one thing I'll watch out for, not just Israel trying to ruin this and sabotage this deal, which they're actively doing, but also AIPAC is going to try to do this by influencing U.S. Congress not to approve the deal. I believe that this will be their big move in the United States moving forward, using people like Lindsey Graham and other war hawks.
Yeah, it's not going to be a cakewalk for Donald Trump, but you get in bed with these people and this is what happens. They'll turn on you on a dime, and we're seeing it. Helena, in Washington, you know, it's already been mentioned, is that, you know, the United States and Israel have suffered a strategic defeat in this conflict. It was an unprovoked conflict, a conflict that started during negotiations. Why do they get to dictate the terms of ending it, or what would be, we would nominally call a peace process here? It's this, everything about this is reverse. It's backwards and upside down.
Well, yeah, you're quite right that it was a war of choice, an aggressive war of choice launched by Israel and the U.S. I have to say, I don't think that they get to define the terms of ending. I mean, Trump is trying to say, you know, we won, you know, they have to start behaving. The future steps in this negotiation will all depend on Iran's behavior. That is all absolute nonsense. You know, he can claim what he wants. And I note that there were reports that the Iranian leaders had consulted psychologists for how to deal with this mad king, is how I think of him. And, you know, evidently it doesn't take a PhD in psychology to understand that the guy is an intense narcissist, and he he needs to be able to present himself as a winner. So they, I think, probably in Tehran, and I'm looking forward to hearing from Fuad Ezzedi, they're probably quite happy to have him claim this as a victory, so long as on the ground the war ends. The war, Israel's war in Lebanon ends, and that is also another key part of this. So Mohammed had mentioned AIPAC. I have to say that one of the real victories from this war is that AIPAC is absolutely crushed, you know, and this war and its outcome have changed forever.
That's a very interesting. I don't think it's been crushed, but it's been certainly exposed, which is going in the right direction. Let's go to our guest in Tehran. Fayad, I heard the foreign minister of Iran say today, let me look at it. Iran says Israel's occupation in Lebanon would be a breach of the deal, of the memorandum of understanding. Well, they are there. I mean, so why don't we see a red flag go up right now and say, look, we're not going to do any talking, we're not going to have any kind of ceremony until Israel fulfills its obligations under a treaty that or an agreement that the Trump administration has put forward here. I'm very frustrated by this. Go ahead.
You know, if you're looking for a second job, I can mention your name to be an advisor to Iran's foreign ministry, because I agree with you 100%. I think Iran should not go to Geneva as long as these daily attacks continue in Lebanon. Let me add this, that this is the first time that Iran has been able to force Netanyahu to behave in a halfway minimal manner. Before this war, Iran had no leverage to force Israelis to do or not to do something in Lebanon. And now, because of Trump's foolishness, Iran has been able to put some pressure on Israelis in terms of how they behave in Lebanon. And this will continue. So if we have something positive coming out of this war, this would be one, that Iranian leaders have decided to make sure that Lebanon is not left behind. And if these type of attacks continue, as you saw about 10 days ago, Iranian missiles hit Israel because Israelis hit Beirut. These are all new things. We didn't have that. Israelis have been attacking Lebanon since 1948. They had a huge operation in 1978, 1 year before the revolution in Iran. And Iranians were not able to do anything to help Lebanese after 1979 in the manner that you see today. So we are moving towards the right direction.
Yeah, let's go back to Calgary. I think one of the problems is the attempts to control the narrative here, because if we look at particularly J.D. Vance, the U.S. vice president, he's trying to form a narrative that what's happened during the war doesn't matter, because we're all going to go back to February 27th, okay? Go back to the status quo ante. That's exactly how they want to frame it. And a lot has changed, and things have changed forever. They're never going to go back to that. Go ahead in Calgary.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what we mean when we say it's a strategic loss. But this administration has been expert at looking at reality in the face and calling it something completely different. I've always said this, when you hide reality in that way, reality has a way of coming back and biting you in the behind. The Americans, when they went along with this Israeli vision to reshape the Middle East, subdue everyone, put everyone on their knees, everyone will just do everything that Israel wants, and U.S. imperialism can reign supreme, and everybody just goes along with it. This was fancy from the beginning. People don't like to be subdued, apart from a few elites here and there, such as like the Lebanese prime minister and president. The Palestinian Authority is guilty of that too.
Yep.
People don't like to be subdued, and they will resist, and that is what has happened. And what Iran has done is shift. the discussion away from Israel's vision into a different regional vision. Now, what that is still remains to be seen. But we are hearing the Qataris, for example, today with Trump talking about in Geneva, reestablishing a new security infrastructure. The Turkish foreign minister using those words and have a very different vision of what that looks like than the Israelis. So we are seeing a big battle unfolding here. And what I think is clear to me is that the Israelis are not going to get their way.
Well, and that is we all have to agree that that's the wild card. That's the fly in the ointment. And, as we do this recording, Friday is very far away still. Helena, let me go back to you here. I'll tell you why the agreement hasn't been published, because Trump would feel embarrassed by it for the very reason that you've already mentioned, AIPAC.
Yeah, I do also want to jump in on Lebanon a little bit, because Mohammed just mentioned that, you know, the prime minister and president of Lebanon have been sort of acting as Israeli cat's paws or whatever. I think they have actually, in the last 48 hours, well, you know, since Sunday or so, they have been moving fairly rapidly in away from their role as Israeli stooges. And that's notable. And it's also notable, I mean, I follow Lebanon very closely. I worked there as a journalist for 7 years in the 1970s at the beginning of the Civil War. I was there covering that initial 1978 Israeli occupation and invasion of Lebanon. I know how long it's been going on for Lebanon. And also, it's true that Iran's strategic strength and resilience has made a real difference, is starting to make a real difference for Lebanon right now, and putting some constraints on Israel's out of control violence there, starting to put some control on it. But the Lebanese people themselves have also mounted a stunningly successful resistance under very difficult circumstances. And I think that's important to note, and to note the resilience of people from the south of Lebanon who have been returning to their homes, even though their homes have been destroyed, and who, you know, are really trying And I think succeeding to a certain extent in pushing their government into adopting a more resilient position.
Well, one would hope so. Okay, this is a broadcast, so we have to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the so-called Memorandum of Understanding. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the so-called Memorandum of Understanding. Okay, let's go back to our guest in Tehran. Fayyad, I think, again, you know, being in media, I watch how narratives are constructed and whatnot, and I've seen Western media really take this and try to control it here. I'm waiting for Tehran to start doing the same thing, because the statecraft that Iran has presented the world, 109 days now, it's just been quite remarkable, dealing with the Russians, with the Chinese, with regional partners, and even adversaries. And this deal, you know, again, it's very much Trump-centric, because that's the way it's presented to the public. But Iran has a number of red lines, and I'm waiting for some speed bumps to face the Trump administration, because they're presenting it, it's all done and dusted and over. This is a pause, if anything. Go ahead.
I agree. And, you know, this is how Trump has managed the oil markets for the last 3 months. He has been saying that this is going to finish in just a few days for, I think, 39 times. So he's getting some relief economically by speaking in this manner. As you know, this war is very unpopular in public opinion in the United States, and even in the U.S. Congress, the Israeli occupied territory, with all the help that and push that AIPAC has, is still Last time they took a vote in the U.S. Senate, Trump lost. Last time they took a vote in the House, Trump lost. There are some Republicans who are voting against Trump. So he's trying to basically tell his opponents that I'm managing this and we are going to get this done. They are red lines for the Iranian side, and they want to make sure that what happened to JCPOA, to the 2015 agreement, is not repeated again. As I said, one thing that Iran has today that was not available to Iran in practice in 2015 is the Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
They will use that leverage to make sure that Trump behaves.
That's a very good point. And let's go back to Calgary. Mohammed, one of the things that, the way it's being presented is that the Trump has forced Iran to open up the strait. I think is going to be interesting, because the second shoe hasn't dropped yet, is that, okay, it's opening up, ending the blockade versus blockade. Okay, good. But all of a sudden it could come to a screeching halt. Is it, it's closed again. Why? Because Trump, you misbehave. Netanyahu, you misbehave. Correct your behavior, and we'll talk about opening it again. I see that as a scenario. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, the scenario is already playing out, because what we're hearing is that the U.S. blockade has been lifted immediately because they can do that. But with the Strait of Hormuz, there's a lot of, I'm not a technical expert in these, but the technical experts are saying there's a lot of complexity involved here. And ships and shipping companies still need a lot of work to be done, including not just removing mines, but just ensuring safety and safe passage and all that. Experts are saying this is going to take some time to do. The Strait of Hormuz will not be functioning on pre-war levels by the end of this week or next week. It's going to take some time. So Iran has already gotten the full lifting of the U.S. blockade, but the Strait of Hormuz itself will take some time, and it's still part of the negotiations, because I think it will be administered by Iran eventually.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the Pandora's box that the U.S. and Israel opened up, and they're going to pay the price for it. And one thing to note here about Lebanon as well that I wanted to go back to very quickly. I can perhaps foresee a scenario, and this is just, thinking out loud here. We don't know this for sure, but I can foresee a scenario where Iran could successfully sort of say, if Israel continues its occupation of southern Lebanon, we have the right to hit Israel. And
absolutely,
and the U.S. can, we won't hurt the U.S. with the Strait of Hormuz if they just stay out of it. This could have, the whole time they've been trying to separate Iran from Hezbollah. Iran is trying to counter that, but trying to separate the U.S. from Israel. It's a big ask. It's a big ask, and it's not an easy thing. But this could be a place that we could be heading to.
Yeah, Helen, again, we're kind of in this war of words, what the memorandum actually means. But, what did the great philosopher Bob Dylan say? Money doesn't talk, it screams. Iran wants its money back, okay? Now, that's an easy litmus test. They know where the money is. They know where, in what banks, the amounts. Now, it's your turn to cough up our money. That's going to be a very important... what is it, $12 to $24 billion? That's, for all of us, that's a huge amount of money. But for a huge nation state like Iran, it's not. It's the principle. Now, cough up the money. That's part of the agreement. Keep the agreement. That's what I'm waiting for. Go ahead.
Yeah, the way it's being sold the way it's being misrepresented in the United States is that by Trump's opponents, by the pro-hawkish people here in the United States, is that Trump has agreed to give, $24 billion however much to Iran, which is not true. It's Iran's money. It's been illegally held by the United States for decades, as far as I can recall. So that's one thing. The opposition to the MOU here in Washington is taking some time to form. because people in Congress who, you know, would be like pro-APAC understand how very unpopular this war is. And of course, we have the midterms coming up in November. So Trump is trying to sell the deal, the MOU, as, you know, now Hormuz will be reopened. And actually, there is not really a technical problem with reopening Hormuz. Everybody talks about mines, but there haven't been that many mines in Hormuz. What has, you know, controlled Hormuz has been the shore batteries of the Iranian military. So, you know, so the French and the British say, oh, we will go in and clear the mines. That's not the issue. The issue is the insurance, you know, and that's
exactly,
in London, Lloyds of London.
Exactly. It's the insurance companies that will be eventually be making this decision. Fiad, let me go back to you in Tehran. Let's go back to ancient history and at least how the media treats history. Donald Trump walked away from the JCPOA. I mean, I really, you know, why would the Iranians trust anything that Donald Trump touches or signs or anything else? I mean, that's got to, the way I think moving forward, and I'm not going to play with these illusory, you know, 30 days, 60 days, okay? A lot can happen, okay? A lot can happen between now and Friday, okay? But Iran has to approach this needing a bulletproof mechanism to make sure that its interests are respected, because Donald Trump has created the precedent.
Yes, things are going to go step by step, and Iran is already ahead, because before the war, we had the Strait of Hormuz open, but we had sanctions on Iranian oil. Now the Strait of Hormuz is going to be open with no sanctions on Iranian oil. So Iran is ahead in that area. Let me also add this, that your viewers probably know, but under the Convention on Law of Seas, countries get 12 miles of territorial waters plus 12 miles of contiguous zone. That's 24 miles. And the Strait of Hormuz is 21 miles altogether. So the Strait of Hormuz lies within Iranian territorial waters and contiguous zone. The same thing is true with regard to Oman. So when you hear Rubio saying that these are international waters, that's a lie. That's not correct. And Iran and Oman will decide what will happen to the Strait of Hormuz. Omanis have been accommodating. Trump a couple of weeks ago threatened to bomb Oman because they want to work with Iran. And at the end of the day, U.S. is 11,000 kilometers away. The Strait of Hormuz has two coastal states, Iran and Oman, and they will make sure that this strait is pirates free. This is what Trump called U.S. Navy the other day when they were taking over Iranian oil tankers. We have two nuclear regimes going on a rampage, killing people, bombing neighboring countries in order to take over Iran's oil. This is what Trump said. Last month, a reporter asked Trump, why do you want to take Iran's oil? And his response was that I'm a businessman, which is an insult to business people all over the world, because being a businessman doesn't mean you are a thief. You're supposed to.
Well, I mean, that entire mentality, let me go back to our guest in Calgary, that entire mentality is ended in defeat, in a strategic defeat for the United States. But one of the things that bothers me, the same people that promoted this war in the first place are still around him. We got 1 minute, 1 minute, 30 seconds. Go ahead in Calgary.
Not are they just still around him, but the root cause of this whole issue is left undressed. And the root cause is Israel's genocide of the Palestinians.
Absolutely.
Don't forget, during the genocide, everyone was talking, is this going to lead to a regional war? This is the regional war. This is what it looks like. And nobody's really going back to the root cause. Israel is still given free rein in Gaza to continue the genocide. They're bragging about it. They still want to colonize all of Palestine and call it all Israel. And they want to go for the project of greater Israel. This is the root cause of everything that we're seeing in the region. So long as that is unaddressed, those people will continue to be around this administration and newer administrations to continue down this path of genocide and regional war. war.
Yes, and everything that you said would not be possible if it weren't for the active participation and support of the United States. From one president to another, it doesn't matter the party, okay? And that is where the responsibility lies. And it eventually will come back. I believe in this karma thing. It's going to come back. And they will regret what they have done because they've destroyed the region. And, you know, I'll give my personal opinion. I'm rooting for Iran because Iran's the only country that can set the region right. That's my opinion there. Fascinating discussion. A bunch of brainiacs. I love these kinds of programs. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Calgary, and in Tehran. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.